All right, our next case is Ewing versus Evans. Again, this is Ewing versus Evans.
May it please the court.
Counsel.
My name is Nicholas McGrath, and I'm a third-year senior certified law student working with the Nebraska College of Law Civil Clinic Program. Myself and my co-counsel, Mike Hannon, represent the appellant in this matter, Mr. Evans. Mr. Evans, a disabled war veteran who served his country for more than 7 years, was discharged from military service after sustaining significant injuries while on duty. His discharge and the persistence of these disabilities caused his income to plummet by more than 50% and established a material change in circumstances warranting modification of his child support. The district court abused its discretion when it disregarded the Nebraska child support guidelines and the directives of this state's highest court. The court's order ignored the fact-specific analysis required under Nebraska law in favor of its own black and white single issue question: had Mr. Evans demonstrated a total inability to work? This approach is untenable. It disregarded the controlling law in this area, and its application deprived Mr. Evans of a substantial right and just result. The district court should have considered, first, whether Mr. Evans had any capacity to work at all, and if he did, could he find an employer willing to and capable of accommodating his still existing physical limitations? And if he could, would this new employment put him in the same financial position that he was in when the original child support order was entered?
Question. So I'm looking at the initial worksheet that was agreed upon as far as the child support, and it showed that your client's total monthly income was $4,400.
Correct.
But in his, the later information or evidence at trial showed that his annual salary at that time was $30,000, which is, doesn't compute to $4,400 a month. Was there any evidence as to that discrepancy in the figures?
Not that I'm aware of. My understanding was that it was understood that at the time of the original support obligation, his annual salary was $30,000, and following his discharge from the military, it reduced to $14,400.
Well, $4,400 a month is $52,800. So why would that number have been used in the 2015?
Your Honor, I'm not aware. I don't think that that was raised at trial. It's not in the trial record or the trial transcript, any discrepancy about that original figure used in calculating that obligation. From our understanding, the undisputed operative facts, as far as both parties were concerned, was that his income was reduced from $30,000 to $14,400. So I'm not sure that I have an accurate response to that question.
I guess my concern is that gap of $22,000, was that attributed to some other type of income earning activity that he had at the time of the decree that perhaps is still present now or at the time of the modification trial?
And I understand the question and the concern, but unfortunately I just don't have a responsive answer to that question.
Thank you.
Yes.
I couldn't find it in the record either, but I was just curious as to your recollection of the
record. Sure.
So your position is that the $30,000 that you apparently believed was used to compute the 2015 order wasn't that, I mean, it's actually lower than what
Correct.
Was used to compute, but we don't have any information.
Right.
But
so I don't know where that gap would come from between the $52,000 and the $30,000.
And that wasn't raised in this modification proceeding to say, yeah, not only is he no longer making $30,000, but for sure he's not making $52,800.
Not that I'm aware of. It was not addressed at trial. That's for certain. The guidelines contain a presumption of a material change that can be rebutted if proven, and the district court's order did not indicate that Mr. Evans had failed to establish that presumption, nor did it suggest that the appellee had successfully rebutted that presumption.
Did the court address the presumption at all?
Not on the face of its order, no. The only affirmative finding in the district court's order was that he had failed to prove an inability to work at the time of trial and at the time of filing.
Was 4-217 argued?
Yes, that is our position. That is what we relied on. We demonstrated both the backward-looking element of the guideline presumption and the forward-looking element. And we believe that we demonstrated that he was entitled to that presumption at trial and that it was not rebutted by the appellee. And as Your Honor points out, it was not addressed in the district court's order. Instead, it appears to be discarded in favor of the district court's own test where if a complainant cannot prove that he has zero earning capacity, then he has not demonstrated a material change. And that's simply not the law in this area. As this court is aware, the Nebraska Supreme Court has also identified factors that are relevant to the analysis of whether a material change has occurred. An application and consideration of these factors would have supported modification for Mr. Evans. But again, the district court's order was silent as to their analysis and application. Instead, the district court promulgated its own test, wherein if a complainant has any earning capacity, then they lose.
Well, wasn't the trial court, as I read the order, it characterized his situation as temporary unemployment, and that didn't satisfy the burden of showing a change in circumstance because it was only temporary.
The district court did cite the proposition that temporary unemployment is not a grounds for a material change, and that is correct. But that was never our position at trial. It was not temporary unemployment that constituted this change in circumstance. It was his dismissal from the military, coupled with the persistence of these disabilities that prevented him from supplementing his income, that constituted this material change. And as to your question about whether it is temporary or not, this court said in Collins that the new circumstance must be more than temporary. And here, Mr. Evans at the time of trial was under a diagnosis and receiving treatment for chronic hip and back pain. He was receiving prescriptions for hydrocodone and Valium. He had still existing physical limitations in place based on a functional capacity evaluation. And these symptoms and limitations had been in place for 2.5 years leading up to trial, and there was no indication that these physical restrictions were likely to resolve in the following 6 months.
Which leads me to the proposition of law that the material change has to be something that's not contemplated at the time of the original decree. He had already suffered the automobile accident at the time?
That is correct.
So how does that play into your position?
So at the time that the original decree was entered, he had already been in the automobile accident, but he had not been discharged from the military. And it was his opinion, and frankly, the position of his doctors, that most of his disabilities would resolve. So the change in circumstance comes where he's ultimately, a year later, medical boarded out from the military, which causes the reduction in income, and the fact that these disabilities and physical limitations have continued to exist in these 2.5 years. That is what was not anticipated at the time the original order was entered.
And so he continued to receive his salary from the National Guard for, what, a year after the accident? Is that what the record shows?
Your Honor, I believe the record shows that he was put on convalescence leave immediately after the accident, and then a year later he was ultimately medically boarded out.
So did he receive his regular pay during that year?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay.
And I see I'm into my rebuttal time, and if I may, I'd like to reserve the remainder for my co-counsel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. It please the court, my name is Deanne Stover. I represent Ms. Ewing in this matter. And as the court can see from the record, this matter's been going on for a number of years. I believe that what the appellant is relying upon is subjective. These things that he reported to the evaluators, he said that his pain level was at a very high rate, 8, but then they noted that he had none of the typical signs of that kind of discomfort or that kind of pain. As this court, as recently as March 2019, noted that when we're talking about child support, the biggest concern is the best interest of the child. And we would argue in this case that Mr. Evans continued to I'm not going to use the word malinger, but he continued to report to his doctors or the physical therapist that he was in a large amount of pain. I think what the district court correctly relied upon was the deposition that was taken of his primary doctor, Dr. Burgess. When we took that deposition, Dr. Burgess went over the records and found that many of the injuries that had been reported or that were relied upon had no longer existed. His cognitive skills were fine. Dr. Burgess said that these things would not be permanent, that he would be able to work. And as we can see, again, as I said, this case went on for a long time. Mr. Evans didn't apply for, as in contrast to Garcia, he didn't apply for every single kind of job possible. He says he can't sit for 10 minutes, he can't stand for 10 minutes.
Wasn't that confirmed by the functional capacity evaluation?
It was, but he was also in school at the time, and he also didn't apply for any kind of job where he would have maybe been able to. If you're a clerk, you can sit in my office. You can sit for 10 minutes, go file something for 10 minutes. You can stand up. You can sit down. There were things that he could have done. He could have worked from home. He could have done whatever he needed to do in order to make enough
income. But he was going to school to hopefully better his ability to work within his limitations.
But wouldn't that include being able to sit or stand for more than 10 to 30 minutes?
He was able to get up during
his
classes.
He had accommodations.
Yes. And he also testified that he was offered or had the offer of a job that would accommodate him upon his graduation, which was in August of 2018. And the appellant talks about whether there were military experts or other sort of experts that testified. I believe that the doctor who was treating is an expert that testified that he had regained his ability to work in some sort of fashion.
But didn't he say as of May 1, the time of his deposition, or maybe the time he had last seen him, I don't recall which, that he was not able to work at a sedentary job?
And I believe that the deposition was following that, and after the deposition, Dr. Burgess reviewed the records and found notations that cognitively he was better, physically he was better, and that he would indeed not have permanent injuries and would be able to work. I think the appellant also tends to indicate that the child support should have been decreased, but then when Mr. Evans was able to start working, as maybe he would have been in this job in his field of psychology, was Ms. Ewing then supposed to file another modification and another modification as he got better? What if he took a trip? What if he was working for 6 months?
How about the imputing the $52,800 at the time of the 2015 order, the $4,400 a month? What evidence do we have to determine, when he's saying his income was only $30,000 at that time, why would a $52,000 income have been used?
Your Honor, it was used because that was what was presented to the court, and that was testified to be his. He agreed that was his income at the time. That's $4,400 a month.
But in the modification trial, there's no evidence about why that figure was used, is there?
No, but it was a stipulation.
But so the evidence we have is that his 2015 child support was based on an income of $52,000, which the testimony at modification is that he was only earning $30,000. Isn't that by itself, I mean, and the fact that he can't even do what he was doing, wouldn't that meet the standard for a 10% change?
I don't believe so, Judge, because he himself agreed that he was making $4,400 a month. I'm not sure why he agreed that he was, but he did agree to that.
But that creates even a bigger disparity. If he was making that much then, he's making a whole lot less now, and the threshold is only 10%.
But we have no evidence that he was not able to do some sort of job, some sort of employment. We have his word only. We have the medical records showing that, as Dr. Burgess testified, that he was improving and improved to a point where these things were not going to be permanent.
But was there any evidence that he could earn, if he's saying he was earning $30,000, was there any evidence to suggest that he could earn more than that currently?
At the time of trial?
Yes.
I don't believe there was any
So even if your client were to say, yep, he should be able to make $30,000, that's what he was making, that's what he testified he was making, that's the only evidence that was there, that alone is a material change based on $30,000 being significantly less than $52,800.
I do understand the difference, Judge, I don't have an answer. If there's nothing further.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And how much rebuttal time do we have? 2 minutes and 18 seconds.
Your Honors, my name is Mike Hannon. I'm a senior certified law student at the University of Nebraska. I'm co-counsel for the appellant. I first just want to address the discrepancy on the numbers. Just most certainly, there was no evidence presented to the trial court that he made more than $30,000 a year, that there was nothing presented. That was a settlement agreement submitted by Ms. Ewing's attorney, and agreed to by Mr. Evans in the hospital after his accident. So, but there's certainly no evidence that he made more than $30,000. And I do also want to address the opposing counsel's statement of is the cognitive improvements of Mr. Evans that the doctor testified to. Dr. Burge only testified to in his deposition that Mr. Evans' cognitive improvements had been getting better. He had been getting a little bit better cognitively in May, but he made no statements or findings as to June and July and August and at the time of trial as to his physical improvements. That's the main issue, is his physical improvements. And in fact, Dr. Berg essentially adopted the FCE from April, the functional capacity evaluation from April, saying he's still under those same restrictions. He was still being, in August, right before trial, he was still being prescribed pain medication, still was under the same physical restrictions that he had been given. So nothing had changed, and the doctor didn't testify as to anything about that. I do also want to note the needs and the best interests of the child here. Simply because he's seeking a downward modification doesn't mean that the interests of the child are going to be harmed. If that were the case, that factor just wouldn't be a relevant one, but the Supreme Court has provided that's a factor. And so for modification here, it's the current order is just unsustainable with Mr. Evans' current situation. Or at the time of trial, his situation. So,
is it your position that we don't need to defer to the court's discretion, trial court's discretion, with regard to her assessment of your client's earning capacity? That maybe she didn't believe that he was quite as incapable to work as he was claiming.
You're certainly entitled to defer to them, but we just believe that the evidence presented to the court doesn't support that finding.
So you're saying the trial court abused its discretion?
Abused its discretion by finding, based on the record it heard, and certainly by the order that didn't outline the guideline presumption, whether the appellee had rebutted that presumption, which Nebraska law requires under the court rules, and didn't address the factors that the Supreme Court has given the court to use. And for that reason, we believe the trial court abused its discretion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The matter is submitted.